our trip to Siberia. It was the later part of June. We got a notice from the government that we get 1 week's time to make a covered wagon and sell out whatever we could and get ready and go to Siberia. And so Mama and all the rest of the people in the village start building a covered wagon. Frida had a heavy canvas sheet to put over. It would have been all right, but we just had to take a bed sheet. So when the rain was real hard, and the bed sheet that we put over the covered wagon, it didn't hold the water, so the things inside got wet. And so we built that wagon and got ready. And Mama had somebody come and butcher a small pig, and she fried the meat in and put it in jars, and some bacon she salted down. And then we had already harvested the early wheat, and so we got ready in 1 week's time. It wasn't much to do. Some people left the dogs and the cats run loose, but we had no animals to leave behind. Mama sold one cow, and one we took along only part way, and we had to sell it because there was no food for the poor animal to graze, and we just had a little bit of stuff that we took along for the horses. And then she baked a big batch of bread, and she cut it up in small pieces and dried it in the oven, put it in one gunny sack, put it in the wagon. So for emergency, that was our food. And so we just got ready, and here comes the police and said, you've got to go on a certain day. So on the 5th of July in the morning, we all drove down to the schoolhouse. We had also church in our schoolhouse. So we drove down there, and we all met, and there was the officer from the Russian government and told us to line up and go. Must have been about 15 or 18 wagons in one convoy. So we started out, and the boys said, when we were at the schoolhouse, the boys ran back yet once more to our house. It was about a block and a half, about 2 blocks, maybe 2.5. And when they came back to Mama, they said, well, the gypsies have already moved into our house and put up housekeeping. And I think that must have been awfully hard for my mother to close the door for the last time in her house and look around and see the good china dishes that Daddy got her when they got married, and the cupboard that Daddy made her a beautiful china cupboard, and grandfather's clock on the wall, and all the furniture. We had not many furniture, but we had nice stuff. And leave everything behind and close the door and take your family, and without any hope, and keep on going. And we had such a beautiful garden at that summer, and leave the garden behind and the field of potatoes and all of our grain to be harvested. And then just take off and go into no man's land and start hungering. So I don't know how Mama lived through that. I think I would have died on the spot. But we were not the only ones. There was lots and lots of people. It must have been thousands and thousands of, because the Germans around, there were village after village, and sometimes just one German village, then maybe a Russian, and then maybe two Germans again. And so they didn't live all in one village, they more or less separated, because in kind of school and so on, the Germans wanted to keep their school going. So we started out, and then we passed my sister Millie's place. They bought the place from Daddy or something. I think I said it on the other side already. But when we passed the place where I was born, and Millie and Dan bought that place in them. So Millie and Dan came out to say goodbye to Mother, and what a goodbye. It was just awful. Millie and Mama were so very, very close. And so we drove on, and the first day, it must have been around noon when we passed that place. So there was no lunch already, just breakfast. And then we came in the evening and parked alongside the little dirt road. There was no highways. Highway was like going through our land. That was a highway going from the big cities like Lutsk to Rovno and so on. We all traveled just ordinary dirt farmer road. And then we stopped along the road. There was, like I said, 18 or so families and everybody bedded down on the ground and cooked a little something to eat, and then we slept. And next day a rain came up. Oh, and what a rain. It was just horrible. Like the heavens had opened up and the water was coming down all at once. Everything got wet. And it was cold. The wind was cold. So I stood and I cried. I said, "Mom, I'm so cold." And she said, "Well, pretty soon the sun will come up and then you'll get warm." So we traveled on, and then about the third day, we came to a little place where was called Smirnov. And there my daddy was well known by that man that owned the whiskey factory, and he had lots of beets and stuff growing there that they make whiskey out of. And so when he found out that Mama was there, and so he said, "Well, I have what they call a root cellar." And he said, "Put your children in there. The rain is coming up and then they'll be dry." So it must have been about four feet wide, maybe 6 feet long or something like that. And so Mama put us in there and put a sheet on the bottom and then put all of us children in, all six, and put the feather bed on top. And then there was a widow lady, and she came to Mama and cried. She says, "I don't know, my children are going to get all wet." And she said, "Can I put them by your children, root cellar?" And Mama said, "Sure." So she put her three children in there yet. So, oh, that was a storm. It was just such a lightning I've never seen before. And the people had to stand in front of the horses and hold them down. It was just lightning after lightning. It was afraid. And so we were all dried in the morning, but everything in the covered wagon was wet. And so we couldn't travel that day because the roads were so over flooded with the water, and it was such a loamy ground. When you drive, it get a bigger and a bigger wheel, so we had to scrape, one of us in the back had to scrape one wheel and the other wheel with a sort of piece of stick. And the man folks in the lower part that pushed the wagons through, one and then the other one and the other one. But we stayed there, I think it was a day and a half, maybe 2 days. And there were so very many blueberries in that little place. It was a nice forest. And so we begged Mama to make us some blueberry pirogue. And so she did roll out some dough and made us some. And boy, were they good after not having any good food for so long. And so we traveled on, and pretty soon we came further and further into Russia. And one time we just ran out completely with food. And we bought along the way, we bought potatoes and sometimes a little flour when we come to a store. And almost every village had a little store. And so we could cook some potato soup and make some kind of little dumplings, put it on, and then drive again. And we was also hungry and wore out, and the money got less and less. And so we came to a big Russian potato field one farmer had there. So we took buckets and ran into the potato field and pulled out potatoes. And when you pulled two or three bushes out, you had a whole bucket full. So the farmer came with a shotgun. He said, "I'll shoot all of you down." One of the men said, "Start with me first and then end with my little baby in the wagon," he said. And the man looked at all of us, hungry, dirty little tramps, and I guess he must have had a heart, and he says, "Go ahead, take all you want for supper." And so we really had some good supper. And then in the also enough for the morning meal. And so we just, when we came to some villages, we had to buy the water. They wouldn't give us any water. And there was some streams, but they were not so full anymore. And when we got the horses watered, we had to pay for it and pull it out the bucket and water the horses and pay for it. And pretty soon our money all ran out. It was a tough, tough going. Then we were about 6 weeks on the road, and it was really getting tiresome, and people got sick. And pretty soon, there was a very big place, and there already about 50 wagons gathered there, and so we came. We were sort of latecomer, our village, and we got notice from the government there, and they told us to get rid of our possession, like the wagon, and just take what we could. Some had to carry it, but there were so many horses and wagons to be sold, so the farmers didn't want to give anything. But we traveled down there maybe a week or a week and a half, and then Mama sold a team of horses, and then she rented a wagon with oxen pulled the wagon. And so that was our last ride on an ox cart. Put all of our things on, and sometimes we had to walk. Maybe it was about 15 miles to the depot where we had to go on to the train. When we got there, the train was 99 boxcars, and then two engines in front and the caboose in the back. So my first come, first takes the first cars, and so we were a latecomer, so sort of more towards the end. And then my mama spotted this Uncle Heinrich, Daddy's brother. And she went up and she says, "Heinrich, take me and the children into your boxcar. Something happened," she said, "you can look after my children." And he said, "We're all filled in," he said. "We're 10 families in this boxcar and we're all Baptists." He said, "I don't know who would like to get out, make room for you." So he couldn't take us in. But he must have known that Mama died, because he was just maybe about 6-7 cars in front of us. And so we was piled in with some other people. And we stayed there about 2 days till more and more people came in, and the train load was filled, so they pulled us out. And we drove, and pretty soon there was nothing to eat. We couldn't stop like we did with the covered wagon and cook something. But sometimes the train would stop and the conductor would say, "We're going to stay here an hour and a half or 2 hours. The engines will take on water and take on coal and so on." And then everybody got their cooking pots out, and the men folks would collect wood here and there when the train stopped, and they found a piece of wood along the track. They picked it up, took it in the car, and then pretty soon we had enough wood. So we would build maybe 2-3 little fires and each put a pot on the beside the fire and cook a few potatoes. And we had that dry bread, and so we could eat a little bit. And every other day we got from the government some soup, and once in a while a slice of bread with the soup, but mostly nothing, just soup. And then the Mama got sick. The second day she was really, really sick. And the third day we rubbed her legs. I rubbed her right leg, and she was really sick. And she took the little money she got from the team of horses and put it in Albert's and Dan's underwear. And then she could hardly talk anymore. And she told the boys what to do to keep us together. Albert was only 15 years old. And in no man's land be father and mother. If we'd have stayed home on the farm, we'd have managed just fine without a mother. But we knew what to do, keep alive. So then in the morning, when I woke up, and they said Mama had died. So everybody had to report when there was a dead one on the train, and so they came, and two guys came with a stretcher and took her down, and she had a big shawl. They spread it over her. The shawl is put it, lifted her out of the boxcar. I stood on the bottom, and she wiggled her left foot that fell one side, and she pulled it back, and it fell back again. And so I think she was not dead yet. She was probably in a coma. And they carried her away, and Mary and I ran after her, and we cried, and pretty soon they put that stretcher down, and one of the guys ran after us, and he was going to beat us up. And so then we didn't yell so loud. We just followed and saw what they were going to do with her, and they put her in a big house and closed the door. And we knocked at the door and tried to open it, but we couldn't get in. And they say that every person that they take out, like women have wedding rings, they take them off. If they have earrings, they take them off, and watches and so on. And then they make a big grave and put all of them in and shovel it shut. And so I guess that's what my mama had, because there wasn't hardly a boxcar where they didn't take one out, or sometimes an old man, or an old lady, and little child. Children and old people are mostly that died. They got this diarrhea so bad, and hemorrhage, blood and everything. It was just, the sickness was just taking over. So then we drove to the next station, and there we had to get out of our boxcars and get into another one, because I guess these were too diseased, or else they had to be fixed over or something. And there we got, they took us in a big place where we could have a bath. That was our first bath since we left home, and that was our shower. And there we could wash our hair, and the ladies all together in one shower, and the men all together. And so we cleaned up, and then they cooked a big meal there in the big house, and they gave us food to eat. It was some kind of grits and all heavy stuff, grits and bread and stuff like that. And so we really had a good meal, and then we got into a better boxcar, and away we went again. And then the third day after Mama died, our little baby sister Lydia, she got so sick she couldn't eat anything, and she had the running bowels, and her little tummy got so big. So when the train was going, we washed her. She died. So we washed her and put a little nice dress on and braided her hair. She had blonde hair and blue eyes. Beautiful little child, about 3 years old. And then when the train stopped, they reported, and a man came and took that little baby in his arms and carried it down and put it on an empty wheelbarrow standing there. And so the train started going away, and we left our little baby sister there on that wheelbarrow, and Mary and I, we just cried our hearts out. But what can you do? You must go on. So then we went on, and pretty soon Sam got so very sick, and somebody was reporting it, so they came, and it was a lady nurse came from the government, and she checked him over. She says, yes, a terrific high fever. He's got to go to the hospital. She says, you children keep on going, and when he, now take him to the hospital, and when he gets well, we'll send him after you. And Mary, she just held on to Sam. She says, no, I'm not going to let go. My mama said we should all stay together, and if he goes, we all go, or if he dies, we all keep him here until he dies. She says, no, we're not going to separate. So this lady nurse had a heart. They took us then to an army hospital, and there we, it was maybe 2 weeks going by train already. So we all needed a bath and a hair washing. So they bathed us and checked us over. And Sam, they put a ice sheet cold, wet blanket around him, and they put him in bed. And there were, I think, 8 beds in the room that we were in with Sam. And but he got better then in 1 week's time, maybe a little bit better. They carried our belongings, the soldiers did. We carried our pots and pans in our hand, our saws and chopping eggs and so on, down to the depot, and they put us, but this time they did not put us on a box car, but they put us on a passenger's car where the soldiers were on going, the wounded ones and the sick ones going home from the war towards Siberia. So they put us on there, and I don't know how long we was on this train, but one time in the afternoon, I think it was, the conductor said we had to get off, so Albert and all the rest of them got off, and Albert looked around and said, oh, one is missing. So he jumped on the train started going already very slow, and he looked around, and I was sleeping on a sleeper on top, and so he woke me up and pulled me down, and we came to the door, and the conductor said, jump this way, then you won't hurt. So he pushed me down, and I jumped because I fell, and Albert jumped, but we didn't get hurt, and the train went on, and from there on we were just next train we got on, we went into the house, and there we laid on the floor, and people were coming and going like it is on a railroad station, and pretty soon they put us another little train and sent us to the Siberia, the last. There was one more town before the other countries were, I don't know if it was China or Turkey, I don't know. Because there were so many, many people that were Turks, and the women, they had all their possessions like gold and silver braided in their black hair. And when they would walk, it would always jingle, jangle. And so we stayed there with a lady. She had a restaurant there, and her husband had a, what they would call taxi. He had about four wagons, and he drove taxi for people. And she had a little restaurant, and on the bottom of the restaurant was a big bakery where they were baking. So she cooked food for all those workers around. They had a big table in the kitchen. She had only two rooms, the kitchen, and then where they slept in it. And sat, they had a few chairs. So the Mr. and Mrs. were sleeping in the bed, and all of us, five children, on the floor. And we was waiting for these people. Crowds in Paul's, they was going to come from about maybe 60 miles or so. It took them 2 days to come and get us out on the farm where we would work for a room and board by some German people. And so we had to wait there 2 days. And there somehow God sent a German officer who was a prisoner of war. And he took us under his arms, and boy, he sure felt for us. So he wrote a letter to Daddy, and he told the whole situation, what has happened, and that his mama died, and his little sister starved to death, and we were now in no man's land. But we was going to families to work, German families, and so we had the address in our songbook. So he sent that letter to the Red Cross, and that letter Daddy got, and that must have really broke his heart. Now all of his five children in no man's land, and the wife gone. What a sad message. And so we stayed there for that winter, and the first job I had when I got there, I had to take, they had bushel baskets of green peppers, and I had to take a fork and pick two times in each pepper and throw it in a big barrel, and then they put dill on it and make sort of dill pickles out of that, and that was our food in the winter. We would get each a piece of bread with some lard on in the morning, and some burnt wheat coffee, and one of these peppers. That was our food. Sometimes the boys wanted two pieces of bread, and I had to go and ask the Mr. or the Mrs. Paul to, boys wanted more bread. I was always the messenger. I had to always go and get stuff and take it back into the kitchen again. So this man had one Russian hired man, and then another German man, and then our two boys. in him. They were the workers on the farm. And Mary and Sam, they stayed by Mr. Paul's sister, and her name was Krause. And she and Sam stayed there, worked for room and board. And so then the following year, it was so maybe July, I was outside, and here comes a wagon around the corner and goes right up to us. And I looked and I thought, we never had company. Nobody ever came because we were so far out in no man's land. There was only three families in this German village. And all of them was about a mile away was a Russian village. And so here comes, and I looked, and there was Millie. And oh, what a joy it was to see Millie. And this beautiful young woman, she must have been about 22 or so, and she came and left her husband back there with a little boy, and she by herself came and searched for us. Every so often we were registered, and we was also registered in this town. And then she hired one of those taxi drivers, and it took 2 days to get out there. And she stayed drove with that man all alone in this country. It would not be possible, but down there the men folks were better, I think. They were not so women crazy, I guess, or something. And so the man, Mr. Powell, says, you merely go back and get your husband and come. And he says, I'll give you all the land you want for your living, and you can harvest whatever you want. And he said, and I give you a home. He had a beautiful little old-fashioned home like we used to have, just two rooms, because while we were there, his mother lived in that home, but she died. And so we had that vacant. And so she said, no, we can't do that. We have a business, and we have to go back. So they loaded us up again on two wagons and took us back to that certain place by the restaurant. And from there, Millie bought tickets on a passenger car train. That was easier to go. So we came to her husband where he was, and he was very ill. That's why they kicked him out of the army, because he was wounded twice. And this time it was in the winter, and he was in them ditches, the snow and cold. And he got a terrific cold, and he was spitting up blood, and so they sent him home. He was no good no more. Something must have been wrong with his lungs or so. And then in the spring they loaded up. He buried his tools under his workshop, and he took his wife and kid, and they came to search for us. And so we stayed there for about 2 weeks, and he worked in a factory, but he got sicker and sicker. And this was a war factory, and he was very much, they needed him so bad because they didn't want to let him go. We had free room there, but we wanted to get closer to the Krauses. And so Millie already had located that the Krauses were in Saratov by the Volga. So she was trying to get down there before the winter would come. And why the Krauses settled in by the Volga, because Mr. Krause and all the others, like I said, on the other side, when the men folks was 18 years old, I may have made a mistake and said 20, but usually 18. Some they prolonged it when they had no father, then the son had to help with the farm work, so he could stay home till 20, but they have to go and serve in the army. They were all sent towards Siberia, there around the Volga for training. And so he knew that area real good. And when he came a certain way into Siberia, then he could get off from the train any time they wanted. If there was a family that decided they was going to go to a Russian village and see if they could hire themselves out and live there, they were allowed to get off. If not, they pushed him in further and further into Siberia. I guess we were about the furthest that they would go. And so he got He got down and he got a job, like I said, on the other side with the sugar factory. And so she was aiming for going down there to the, by the Volga. And so when we got there, well, they were all very happy, the Kraus family, to see us. And so then really the trouble started. Then it was the poorest, I think, that Millie and Dan ever were. And then they rented a little one-room home and was very, very sad. There was the food ran out and the money ran out. And so it was around Christmas time. She had to buy a load of wood. And so then he got real sick and there were no beds. And so he had to sleep on a sort of a park bench. And he got a real bad sore where he had to lay on. He had to sleep in his clothes that he wore. And then one morning, Millie and I, we stood and watched him, and we thought he was dead. And pretty soon he took one more deep breath, and I thought he would fall off that bench. And then he was gone. And she stood there and watched him, and she said in Russian, "Yastoboy Pomaru," that means, "I will die with you." So the Russian priest came and buried him, and they must have bought the casket for her and everything paid for it, because she had absolutely no money. And so after he died, well, then we were out. We just didn't have anything at all. So once in a while we'd go to the Russian village, see if we could get some potatoes and so on to make a living. But there was a German man, he had married a Russian girl, and they was expecting their first baby. And so she was always alone in the house, and he worked in the sugar factory. So Millie asked him if she could come and live with them, and they only had one room. And it was a little divider was between one corner in their bed, where the bed was. And he said, "Yes, come on, but you have to stay." And so we put our belongings on the floor behind that divider, and it was sort of like a fireplace, and we would cook in there too, in the front. And so we was all sleeping on the floor on our feather bed and whatever we had. One time Millie got very, very sick, and so she heard there was a free doctor, and so she took Mary and took the streetcar and went over to this other town, I think it was called Samaria. And this doctor, he checked her over, and he gave her one of these powder pills in the office, and he gave her two to take home. And he said, "Be sure and don't let the children get anything of this." So he says, "You take one tomorrow morning and one tomorrow night, and then you'll get better." And so she came home, and I had nothing cooked. When she came, she was so tired and wore out, she lay down on the floor and fell asleep. And then in the morning, she took herself that pill, and we made a little soup, but she couldn't eat. And then in the evening, she asked me to give her that pill, and so I did. And then that night, she started to die. And it's just awful to have somebody, to see somebody being poisoned, and then they die. It was the most horrible death that I've seen, and I've seen quite a few people die. And so in the morning, towards morning, I asked that man, he was sleeping on the other side of that divider with his wife, what time it was, and he says, "It's about 3 in the morning. Pretty soon it got gray outside, and so I ran over to Krause's and called Dan and Albert and told them that Millie is so sick. And then they also had Amelia, and she right away came along. She was a little bit a big-mouthed girl, and she had 2 children without being married, and very bossy. And so she came along, and she says, "When the sun will get up, then she'll die." And so she did die, and then Millie and I, we washed her up and cleaned her up and laid her on the floor in the corner there. We took all our belongings we had, and we went over to the Kraus. And the boys and Mr. Kraus built a casket, and then we buried her, and that was just before Easter. And we buried her by her husband. And then we was to stay with the Krauses. And then Mr. Kraus found out that this Mr. Petznik was Mama's brother-in-law, and that he was stationed not too far from the Volga. There was a big mill that they sawed trees down and made lumber mill. And he said that, come on this way, because here you can find work, and then we'll sometimes get together and go on home. And so we did, and that was towards the fall then. Maybe it was September. And when we came down where the Petzniks were, we went about 2 miles from the nearest village into the woods and built a little one-room log cabin. And there were 3 families of us, and Krause, Schlenders, and us. And then we lived there that winter, but that was the most miserable winter anybody could live through. And but in the fall of the year, Mr. Petznik, he said to Mr. Krause, he said, I'm going home and buy my ticket and go home. And he says, well, you pay half for the children, we pay the other half, and then we'll go together. He says, I can't do that. I have enough money earned to go back home and get me a couple of horses and start farming. So we had to stay that winter where the Petzniks already went home. And in the spring of the year, we went, they gave us a boxcar to move into. He said, the man on the depot said, you move in here, and then I see when the train comes from deep Russia, then I'll hook you on and send you into Germany. Well, there was maybe about 50 miles or so where the German border was already. We were that close already. And but I had no money to buy a ticket for the railroad train. So pretty soon the man says, well, every time the train comes in here from Russia, it's already 99 cars and I can't hook you on. He said, you have to find other ways to get home. So make a long story short, we just hired Mr. Krause and the Schlenders and us. We hired 2 wagons and we gave 2 pillows, and some gave an axe and some gave a saw, and these men folks knew a shortcut through the woods. So it took 2 days to drive us through the woods on this hired wagon, and we came into the German settlement. And when we came to the depot, and the man unloaded us, and the depot man came out, and he's a German fellow, and he says, oh, 3 more lost families that came home, and he almost started crying. And the soldiers had already cleaned up and closed the kitchen up and all that, and then they opened the kitchen and they gave us, made some food for us, and he fed us and he gave us a place to sleep. And then the next morning, must have been in the afternoon or whenever, the train came from Russia into Germany. Then they sent us, put us on, this man put us on and sent us home. But when we arrived in our hometown, then we got transportation from the government. We were 3 families, so we got 3 wagons, and they took us home out in the country 20 miles where we lived. And everything was burnt down. There was only 1 cherry tree standing. So went up to the schoolhouse, and there we met a man by name, Mr. Krull, and he said, the Rehlich house is still standing. Why don't you come up there? So he took us up there and loaded us, and he lived in the kitchen, just a small little room, and then there were 3 other families in the big room. So we moved into the big room and stayed there. But the next day, one of the families was a Polish family. They moved out. So there were 3 families living in one room that winter. And then in spring of the year, the German government gave us permission to go into the woods and get some woods and make some lumber and build us a house, which the boys and the Krauses did. And then in the spring they started in, and by fall we had that little house finished. It was about like a double garage or so, maybe not quite as big. And then we moved in there, and then in 1919, I think it was, when the Russian-Polish war started, that's where we were right in, being next to the highway, so all the traffic going and coming from the war was going always past our house. In those days, the war was, soldiers had to walk walk in, there was just horses, wagons, in no automobiles or trucks at that those days. So the traffic was heavy, but they made the headquarters in our little house. And one day I was standing out there and by a tree, and a bomber came over, and he was going to bomb the little bridge on the highway, and he missed it and hit the tree, and the splinters came flying over. It was about not even maybe 2 blocks from where I was standing. And this war didn't last too long. It must have lasted about 5 weeks or so, and then the Russian lost the war, and so the Polish came in. And right after the war, then Daddy wrote and said, I'm going to send for you people as soon as I get permission. Then in 1921, we had the ticket already and worked our papers out, and then we drove to Warsaw, Poland, and waited for a visum, but the boys were of military service, so they couldn't get the visum. And so we, in the meantime, Daddy got the American citizen, and so we met a German spy there in Germany, I mean a Hollander spy. He was spying over Germany during the war, and he was shut down, so he couldn't go back to Holland. He had to go through Germany, so he hung around there in Poland. And so he got to be good friends with our boys, and he went into the Russian consul one time and said, you're an American citizen. And they said, well, if that's so, then let him prove it. So he telegrammed Daddy, and he sent the papers to Warsaw, Poland, and those papers I still have. And then we got, the next day we got called in, got our visa, and we started out for America. And I think this tape is full, and I'm not even half finished. But in 1921, in September, we came to Daddy, to America, and that sure was some homecoming. It was the most peaceful and most pleasant day that I ever had in my life when I came home to my daddy's house, and he gave us a good meal of pork and beans and bread, and that was our trip. I have much to say, yet I guess I have to start another tape or something, because I talk fast, but still there is so much to be said and there is no room, so maybe I'll start another tape. But anyway, this German spy, he went down there where we used to live in Poland, and he married one of our girlfriends that was living next to us. Her name was Paulina Mauser, and he sent me a little picture from him and his wife and his little baby girl. When I was married already, I got this little picture from him. And he sure was a helpful man, but he was a very, very educated man. He could speak all kinds of languages, I think that there were. And so that was our trip from Siberia. But like I said, this little Alexander Millis boy, we gave him to his mother. He lived in Kosarov, in that village where I was born, and he's still there. Daddy didn't have enough money to pay his ticket, so nobody else, he couldn't borrow any more money, so he's still over there. And I tried hard to get in touch with them, but somehow the letters never came back, and they were never delivered, I guess. So I see my tape is full, and I haven't even said half of it. I think I have to start in and talk more about the Polish-Russian war, how awful that was, and how many times I brought some water from the, about a block and a half, I had to carry it on my, and came home and was going to cook a little something, and there was a wagon full of wounded soldiers came from the front, and they cried, water, water, and so I had to take the water down and give me to drink, and my water was gone. Back to the well I went again to get some more. It was a very, very sad experience for a little girl. I was only 14 then, and had to go through this awful shooting and soldiers all around, but somehow I was protected. I wasn't wounded or hurt in any way. The soldiers were all pretty nice to us. The officers in our house, they were very nice and kind. And also the ones that were outside watching that big canyons that they had dug in there. They were nice to our boys, and so they helped us many times with some food. We didn't have any food, so they had some, and they gave us a little. We survived somehow. But it sure were hard days, being a 14-year-old girl. Mary, she took off and went to the Krauses because some of the soldiers were after her. So she was 2 years older and lived about 3 miles away from the highway. Daddy didn't even know there was a war, just when the bomb.